Accession number 12709, Mr. Albert Davis, reel 16.
Mr. Albert Davis, reel 16. You were describing some of the fighting in the south of Normandy, Mr. Davis.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I parked the bike on the side of the road, and then I had to leave it there and go on foot to find Lieutenant Hawkins and to see how close and what sort of support they would require. Because where the mortars were, I thought it was a bit out of range. Anyway, he said, well, right now we don't need any support. He says, because we can't do anything. We're getting stunk so badly that we can't move about. He says, unless we get another division coming up, support's no good. He says, what you can do, he says, if we have time, he says, give us some covering fire, because sooner or later we shall have to get out of here. Anyway, he said, wait until I get in touch with you. So off I go to get back to my mortars. And believe me, they were threaping that road with 88s. Tanks would all go back. They didn't come down that road at all, because as soon as they showed the nose, it was knocked out. 88s, bang gone. Anyway, I got back to the gateway leading across the field where the carrier was, and I noticed in the ditch alongside one of my lads. I dropped the motorbike. Well, first of all, a shell dropped, knocked the spokes out, busted the tank, petrol was all flying out, so that was a write-off. I ran to this lad and turned him over, and it happened to be my driver who I'd left before. And he had a lump of shrapnel in his guts. All his guts were hanging out. I did what I could, but he was so much in pain that all his mouth was biting the earth, and all his mouth was full of soil. I got my finger and cleaned as much out as I could, got my water bottle and washed his mouth out, but he kept on wanting to turn back on his stomach. Well, I couldn't do anything more for him, clean him up, but stop him biting the soil. I put his berry out of his pack underneath his head. I said, right, I'm going to get an ambulance. It took me 2 hours before I could get an ambulance or a first aid to have a look at him. I heard later on that on the way up, they did get an ambulance to him. On the way back, he'd already dead. Now, of course, I had to leave him and get back to my mortars. Well, it came in the evening, dusk, and we had official orders to pull back. Well, that's when I could give them a few round bombs. I fired a few bombs and waited till our forward lads had pulled back, and then put a barrage down of 3-inch mortar bombs.
So this was covering fire to allow them
yes,
to pull it back?
Yes, well, in case any jellies were following close on, like, to deter them. And as soon as most of the lads were back, I got the thumbs up from Hawkins. Well, by the way, I couldn't get the thumbs for Hawkins because he'd been killed then. He said he was going to get the VC, but as they started to move back, a shell landed close to him and killed him. So that was his VC gone. and it also killed his batman. The rest of them pulled back, and I was given the okay, pack up on that. But another regiment made another attack and held it there, because but we'd already softened them up, and they were withdrawing anyway. Instead of following up as we thought they might do, they were withdrawing. Sort of both sides had had enough. Germans were withdrawing, and when our tanks went down after, the next day, they didn't even get fired on. So after that, it was the Folly Gap. And that closed the road, the last escape for the Germans. Of course, they were pulling back then, because they knew that if they didn't go back across the fields, eastwards, northeastwards, there would be no chance of escape, because they knew that the Folly Gap was getting them surrounded.
When they broke and started to move away quickly, what was your role then? Because obviously you must have been travelling as quick as you possibly could after them.
Well, again, then we were all disorganised. You know, we lost so many men again there that it was chaotic at times. It was a matter of getting everybody together, seeing what losses were. Occasionally, one of the odd one would turn up and been lost. And sort of rebuild some sort of a unit. Naturally, there's always reinforcements from other units going up to take large places.
What was the quality of the reinforcements we were getting at this time?
Well, I thought what we had, they were very poor, you know. They hadn't had much training. Some hadn't even fired a rifle. But they soon learned how. If they didn't, that was their own fault. Them days, they'd put anybody in. If he could carry a rifle, he could fire it. And that was it. They didn't have the training as they should have had. Probably 3 months training to get them fit, and that was it. They're up the front line. We're just what we call cannon fodder. There are replacements all the time.
I suppose it was fortunate that the Germans were on the retreat now.
Yes, well, when they close a Folly Gap, the Air Force, what I did see was nearly 1,000 bombers come over and bombed Caen and the Folly Gap. And it was a terrific sight. But for hours, you couldn't see a thing because it was all black smoke. Well, our role then after, during the Folly Gap attack, was to follow on. And the Air Force had really gone to town. Now you see the typhoons with rockets diving down on targets, well, and there was hardly anything firing back at them. And you could see the destruction they caused as we passed through. Horses, vehicles, tanks, everything. Just it stank with dead bodies, especially horses. You know, you see all the flies on them, oh, terrible. Anyway, after that we had a bit of a rest. And then it wasn't long before we followed the guard's armour through to Brussels, crossed over the border and followed the guard's armour to Brussels.
Did you enter Brussels yourself?
Yeah. Went in Brussels. It was a terrific reception. really. Too good. If he'd had the sense, he could have slaughtered thousands of British soldiers. You know, if he'd had the bomber force to just dropped a few bombs on Brussels, it would have killed thousands of us. Because going up the streets, you just couldn't get through. Anyway, we were turned off and we, out of Brussels, they'd give us anything. And we were stationed just a couple of miles further on, just outside Brussels. We had a couple of days there, rest.
Where did you go to after that?
Right, from there we went to the Albert Canal and formed up ready for an attack on the town of Geel. Now the bridge was pretty unstable and some had to cross the canal on barges, on small craft, or wade across. The bridge was under fire at the time, but nevertheless the engineers got it going so that we get carriers across, if not tanks. Now, myself, I had to go with the forward companies, A Company, I believe it was, in preparation of preparing positions for the 3-inch mortar for support. I remember setting off across a spud field along the ridges and being fired on with machine guns. A Sergeant Wilson on my right, he got hit, and two lads on my left got hit. But I was all right, kept going until we come to a farmhouse where there was a little bit more cover. Exploring this farmhouse, there was a little round haystack in the yard, and seeing some bits of straw falling from this haystack, it's very still, so we got inquisitive, and two lads fixed his bayonet on his rifle and started prodding this haystack, and all of a sudden a yell let out. Apparently there was four Jerrys in it, and they'd hidden, well hidden, right in the middle of the haystack, but one being prodded with a bayonet fetched him out, and he fetched the rest of them out too, and of course they were taken prisoner. Then I had a look around, see if I could find a respectable place for the mortars, and it was a fairly thick hedge, and I eventually found a place, set up one mortar, the first one to arrive, with Sergeant Collins, told him to stay there, and then my own mortar came, set up another one about 50 yards away. And we're waiting for the other one two to come later on. Now, I had to leave then, and so told Sergeant Collins that I would be back and give him more instructions. First of all, we went to a farmhouse on the left, see if there's anything there. There was only an old lady and a young teenage girl there. And I know in my own mind that there was Jerry's up in the loft, because every time we asked questions, were the Germans there or were they, they'd start crying. And I couldn't get any, make any sense out of the two people. But I hadn't time to spend on probing about. I'd got to get back to the mortars and to the forward troops. By this time, the forward troops are entering the town. So I said to Sergeant Collins, well, it's no good of staying here. I'm going to take my mortar up with the forward troops. So I loaded my mortar on to the carrier, along a track, and to the edge of the town. Set it up behind a house, in the yard of a house, and said, instructed the lads to stay there until I got back, along with one of the lads, Geordie Whittaker, who came with me. I said, I'd go up in the town and find out what the situation was. Anyway, on the way up, we come across a trench, somebody crying inside it. It was apparently a civilian girl. And she'd been hit with shrapnel right in the, by the thigh, top of the thigh. But couldn't do anything for her, except to pacify her and say, right, I'll get an ambulance for you. No, I couldn't stop and deal with her, because we've got to get on. Now, as we entered the town, we went across gardens to a bit of an orchard, onto the street again, and as we entered the town, right at the beginning of the town, on a crossroad, not a crossroads, a junction, no, let me say, it's a V road, one road shooting the left, one road shooting right on the corner. I came across one of our six-pounders, but there was no ammunition with it, and there was no crew with it. And I couldn't understand why. Now, what's this gun doing here on its own? I said to Geordie, where the hell's the crew? Anyway, we couldn't do much about it, so we marched into town, walked into town. When we got there, there was two Shermans who got into town, and Captain Sir Winston Field, as was our officer at the time. I asked him about it, and he said, well, there should be a crew on it. He says, probably they've scarpered. I said, well, they've scarpered. They must have scarpered for something. Anyway, I said to him, well, look, I've got my mortar on the edge of the town. I said, but it's no good to you. I said, it's too far away, really. I said, would you like them up into town? And then we can operate from here, outside the town. He said, that'll be very nice, Sergeant Davis, he says, because he was a gentleman. He said, if you can get them up here, he says, but I've just been informed that we're cut off. I said, we can't be cut off. I've just walked up to town. He said, have you? I said, yeah. He says, well, George Wood has told me that we're being cut off. I said, well, that may account for that empty, crewless six-pounder. I said, but I don't think so. I said, anyway, we'll go back. I'll go back. This was going on. First of all, I went in the cafe and had a free beer. Had quite a long parley about different things. I said, me and Geordie will go back and see if we can get our mortars through on the carrier. Right. Well, first of all, I said there was people knocking the windows. I said, and they beckoned. There's some bosh down the cellar. I said, we'll collect them as we go back. Well, at least we push them forward. So we did. We got these prisoners out of the houses, like. No kind of resistance. Just stood at the top of the cellar steps and said, right, come on out, prisoners. Well, they got no option. They didn't know whether I was going to chuck a grenade down or not. So they just come up the steps, and eventually we must have had 30 or 40 prisoners. By the way, I'm a Sergeant Robinson said, volunteer to come with us. So while he was doing one, we were doing the other, and eventually we got 30 to 40 prisoners. So come on, we'll have to get back to HQ now with these. So lined them all up down the street and started marching them down until we just passed the sixth pounder at the beginning of the V. All of a sudden, this prisoner scattered right and left in the ditch either side of the road, and Sergeant Robinson with them. Me and Jody just stood in the middle of the road and said, what's happening? What's that? And right in front, about 150 yards, a little less, I think 100 yards away, was two Tiger tanks sitting in the edge of an orchard. And also German infantry milling around. I said, Christ, Jody, I know what it is now. I said, let's scalp her. And I gave a quick burst on the Sten gun, a longer to the prisoners, and then they opened fire, the tanks, and with bullets skimming past our lug hole, we rushed to the garden, one of the garden walls, and literally threw ourselves over to take cover. Well, my next thought was to get back into town and warn our two Shermans that there was tanks about to come up the street, which we did. Mind, I don't know how long it took, but it seemed hours before we could get there, and yet it couldn't have been many minutes really, because we hurried all the times, cutting across one garden, over a wall here and there. Eventually we got there, and I went to Hotel Captain Swinsonfield, and he told the tank commander, which immediately took up a position on the road that he thought that I said they are coming up. And the other one took up a position on the other side of the road. Anyway, this was late afternoon, and by this time it was getting dark. Nothing else, they didn't attempt to come up the street then. But in the dark, they did. First of all, a patrol of Germans came up, only young lads. And there was two lads that I was in the doorway, in the shop doorways, let them pass then, and two lads further on. So once the patrol passed, stepped out and said, prisoners, you know, surrender. And straight away they put their hands up. I didn't take part in that, actually, but there were some of my lads. Anyway, we took marches into the centre of town and told the others to look after them. They said they were going to give themselves up anyway, but they're armed to the teeth. Well, it went on till about 2 o'clock in the morning, when you could faintly hear the tank coming up the street, very, very slowly. It's a Tiger tank too, very slowly, and just make out the infantry dashing behind it. You know, it's difficult to focus. It's dark. Anyway, the Sherman let him get within 100 yards and then let him have two rounds sharp and no time, up in flames. Well, that stopped any attack that might have been going that way, because the soldiers on foot, then you could see them and hear them more than see them, scarpering back down the street, back to the edge of the wood. Well, come daylight, nothing else happened about that. Come daylight, one of the carrier drivers said, well, I'm sure I can get through with these wounded men. So you put them on stretchers, I'll take them through. He volunteered, like. He said, I'll use my speed. And he did. He went through with these. Well, we know he went through because he never came back. And I said, well, if he can get through, I'll get through. We'll go back to my mortars now and find out what's happened. So Geordie and I set off down the street again. Practically the same route as what we'd come up, across these gardens, over through the orchard a bit, and to where I left the mortar. But the mortar wasn't there when I'd left it at all. I wonder if they'd been taken prisoner or what, or whether they've had the sense to get out. I don't know. Anyway, we decided to cross the road and retrack from where we started and find Sergeant Collins and his gun. So we started going along across the road, along a lane, sunken lane, and I came across my mortar, my carrier. I bloody hell, Geordie, here's my carrier. It's been hit by a tank, according to looks things, and it was stuck with its belly on the side of a bank. Couldn't have moved forward or backward. But there was no crew, no sign of any bodies or anything. But all our kit had gone, excepting my one red lanyard, which I pulled out and put in my pocket. Anyway, right, we'll get back to the other mortar. So, continuing along the lane, on our right, there was some movement in the ditch. And I said, bloody hell, Geordie, some Jerry's here. And I just gave a short burst from my Sten gun, and all these Jerry's dropped the rifles and stood up, 11, I think it was, altogether. I forget the exact number. Put their hands up and came out in the lane. One, I remember very well, he was a typical German. Very tall, 6 foot, 6 foot two, very good looking, blonde, wavy hair, and in Oxford English. He said to me, he said, oh, I suppose you're going to hang your washing on the Siegfried line now. I said, no, but I'll hang you on this barbed wire if you don't get moving. And with that, just another short burst along by the feet, you know, just two or three rounds, to show him that I meant it. I said, get moving along this track. And I kept going along this track until I come to, it wasn't Sergeant Collins, it was another sergeant. Sergeant Dewar. I said to Sergeant Dewar, I said, here, take these prisoners back to HQ, will you? He says, yes, okay. I said, I want to find Sergeant Collins's mortar. Anyway, I couldn't find Sergeant Collins, but I could see his mortar. His mortar was there. So I said, right, put the mortar on the carrier. We'll fetch a carrier. Well, actually, we didn't have to fetch a carrier. The carrier was not far away, parked. I said, I'll fetch the carrier, and we'll put the mortar on the carrier. And he uses, I don't know where he is, so he's got the woody then, thinking somebody's pinched his mortar. So, off we set again to go back out to town. And by using the speed, you know, we got back into town. And by this time, Captain Sir Winston Peel said, well, he said, Sergeant, I don't think you'll be required now. He said, I hear that we're going to get relieved. The London Scottish, I think he said, are going to relieve us. And he says, I think you can go back. Anyway, I didn't go back straight away. I wondered, I said, I'll go and see my mate, Sergeant George, on the anti-tank gun. Anyway, I went across and apparently he'd been killed. He'd had a direct hit on his gun. So he was killed. Eventually, we did go back, and the whole battalion withdrew bit by bit, and London Scottish, this was in the evening, and the next morning London Scottish walked over and they said, reported that all the Germans had gone. They didn't come across a German. So we could have stopped in the town in comfort, really. But there's so many Germans around, back and front, you didn't know where they're coming from. Unfortunately for us, a lot of them had been transferred from the Air Force into the infantry, and they hadn't got the know-how or the instinct to kill anybody. And therefore, they preferred to take prisoner rather than shoot us. Killing us.